this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Bahati Mutisia for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazine. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Teen Vogue. Our first article is titled, Meet the Real Miss Monopoly, Lizzie Maggie, creator of The Landlord's Game. I'm sorry, that's Lizzie McGee, creator of The Landlord's Game. And this article is from Teen Vogue's OG History series, which, as you know, is a Teen Vogue series where we unearth history not told through a white, cis, heteropatriarchal lens. In this edition, Lucy Diavolo explores the painfully ironic origin story of one of the most famous board games. This was published on May 11th, 2020. Sometimes, a viral meme strikes a chord of truth that could ring forever. Such was the case with the thoroughly roasted resurfacing of Miss Monopoly this weekend. In the ensuing drunk fest on the character, there's a demonstration of the bitter ironies of capitalism in everything from who the Miss Monopoly character is supposed to be to how the game named after her celebrates women inventors while ignoring the legacy of the woman who invented the game that inspired Monopoly in the first place. First, who is this Miss Monopoly? According to Hasbro, the company that manages the Monopoly games empire, she's Mr. Monopoly's niece, a self-made investment guru here to update a few things. Even this description is soaked in irony. How is the niece of one of our culture's most enduring symbols of wealth self-made when the very idea is a myth? Aside from this description, this weekend's viral moment drew heavily from a September 2019 ad for the game, which profiles three teenage girls who are getting their start as inventors, bringing the game's intent as a celebration of women entrepreneurs and investors to life in the modern age. While the ad is sentimental and inspiring, It is also laced with irony given how the game of Monopoly came to be and what it was originally intended to accomplish. As elucidated in a 2015 excerpt from Mary Pylon's The Monopolist, published in The Guardian, about the origins of the game, Monopoly is based on the Landlord's Game, created in 1903 by a woman named Elizabeth Lizzie McGee. Through the machination of a man named Charles Darrow, the game eventually ended up in the hands of the game company Parker Brothers, which was eventually acquired by Hasbro in 1991. In a short time, I hope a very short time, men and women will discover that they are poor because Carnegie and Rockefeller, maybe, have more than they know what to do with, McGee said of her game in 1906. According to Smithsonian Magazine, which referenced two of the most infamously rich men of the era, McGee was using it to teach about the dangers of land grabbing and wealth consolidation, explains Brian Van Slyke, a member of the workers-owned Toolbox for Education and Social Action Collective, known as the TESA Collective. The group behind games like Rise Up, Strike, and Space Cats Fight Fascism. It was this underground tool in the early 1900s, a popular underground game, where people would make their own copies at home and that kind of stuff. According to Pylon and Van Slyke, McGee had intentionally made two different sets of rules for the game. One that was designed to foster monopolies and encourage competition, like the way the game is still played today, and another that was designed to be anti-monopolist, distributing created wealth instead of encouraging players to concentrate it. The Landlord's Game, as McGee created it, had the potential to teach people about the painful realities of wealth capitalism can cause, not simply encourage them to role-play ruthless capitalists. Her point was for kids, when they played the game, to see the dangers and see all the bad things that happened and how people hated each other and how only one person could win, Van Slyke explained. And then, in her anti-monopoly version, everyone would come together and work together and play. Challenging the status quo ran in McGee's family. According to a 2015 New York Times article adapted from Pylon's book, McGee's father was a slavery abolitionist and rousing speaker who worked with then-presidential candidate Abraham Lincoln in the late 1850s. Young Lizzie worked as a stenographer and did comedy while perfecting her board game based on the theories of economist Henry George. George's theories were called Georgism, and as explained by the 2001 Encyclopedia of Global Justice, were grounded in the idea that all taxes should be replaced with a single tax on property. His ideas were popular with some progressives in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, and though they were critiqued by contemporaries like Karl Marx, George's work, including a book called Progress and Prosperity, helped draw people into the burgeoning political left of the era. McGee was also an early feminist who believed in empowering herself. She obtained a patent for her game, notable in part because of how Hasbro's Miss Monopoly ad highlights how few patents were held by women. Pylon's 2015 piece in the Times also chronicles McGee's newspaper ad satirizing the economic nature of marriage by offering herself up to the highest bidder. Despite her news-making antics and her hand in creating a world-famous game, McGee's story was almost lost to history. As Pylon explains, it was a legal battle over a game called Anti-Monopoly in the 1970s that unearthed her patents and codified her role in the creation of one of the most famous games in the world. Monopoly is, in terms of board games, probably the most successful game of all time, if not one of them. And it is promoted to teach people about economics, how to save money, Van Slyke says. He says Darrow's story was long regarded as a rah-rah feel-good story of like this guy invented this game during the Great Depression, he sold it and made a ton of money and lifted himself up by his bootstraps. Ultimately, it's believed that McGee got only $500 from Parker Brothers, while Darrow became a millionaire on the back of the ever-expanding Monopoly empire. The game is now known not just as a painful way to spend a couple of hours with friends and family, but for its readiness to rebrand itself to tap into any pop culture phenomenon that might sell. It sucks, Van Slyke says of the ironies. It's doing exactly the opposite of what she wanted it to. But I think in many ways it's also a testament of her lesson, which is that the economic injustices of capitalism will just tear up everything, even the game that was meant to mock it. Ultimately, the warnings the landlord's game were meant to impart are as relevant today as they were when McGee created the game. The next article is titled Teen Vogue's 21 Under 21 of 2020, The Girls and Femmes Building a Better Future. This is by the Teen Vogue staff and was published on November 24th, 2020. To say 2020 has been a year like no other is an understatement. We have faced a dangerous and deadly pandemic that changed our lives in profound ways, an extended and divided election season, the worst wildfires California has ever seen, and let's not forget the murder hornets. This year, we have also seen the continued surge of youth activism, spurred by the killings of Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, Tony McDade, and George Floyd, with the video of a police officer kneeling on his neck seared into our minds. Our collective rage erupted amid the pandemic. Organizers, activists, and everyday people said enough is enough. We demand change. Young people have been at the forefront of this movement, marching in the streets, rallying our communities, and talking to our parents about racism. But amid all this tragedy, there has also been resilience. While we continue to work to keep one another safe and speak out against injustice, we have found joy and community too. We continue to be pioneers and support one another in a time of need. While we still look cute, even if it's just for that Zoom call. As we close out this year, we are excited to present you with Teen Vogue's 21 Under 21 2020 list, an incredible group of girls and femmes who have worked against the odds to innovate, create, connect, and inspire. Just a few weeks ago, Kiaja Brooks, age 20, filled our feeds when she addressed the Kansas City Board of Police Commissioners with a scathing critique of their lack of oversight of police misconduct. Teens for Equality organized one of the biggest marches of the year in Nashville. Andrea Yearwood, 19, broke barriers for trans athletes. Anika Chabrolu, age 14, invented a potential therapy for COVID-19. Hannah Lucas, age 18, created a life-changing app to help people grapple with their mental health. And Maitreyi Ramakrishnan, age 18, whose depiction of teen angst in Never Have I Ever has hit home for all of us. Those are just a few of the incredible young people on the list that follows. We hope their stories will inspire you like they did for us, and give some much-needed light in a year that is studded with darkness. Andrea Yearwood, age 19, the all-star advocate. This is by Brittany McNamara. Andrea Yearwood is good at track and field, like really good. But because she's transgender, being really good was never enough. The U.S. Education Department recently said transgender athletes have an unfair advantage over their cisgender peers. The statement stemmed from a lawsuit against Andrea and athlete Terry Miller attempting to prevent transgender girls like them from competing in girls' sports in Connecticut. But Andrea has never given up. "I knew that what I was doing was bigger than just me," she says. "I know that speaking up against the injustices that transgender athletes face within sports is something that needs to be continued. It cannot be something that gets swept under the rug solely because it makes some uncomfortable." Despite the challenges that sometimes make her want to quit, Andrea has stayed true to herself. "If you know in your heart something to be true, then do not hesitate to show that truth," she says. "There will be people that will make it an effort to dim your light and silence your voice, but you mustn't allow them to get the best of you." Now that she's in college, Andrea says she's shifting her focus to fighting for trans people in general, not just athletes. She's trying to bring awareness to issues like medical bias against trans people and the epidemic of violence against Black trans women. "Even though the community has come a long way from the past," she says, "there will always be more work to be done." Next is Andrea Alejandra Gonzalez, age 19, the all-around advocate, and this is by Daphne Frias. "An infectious smile and a personality that make you want to be her best friend. That's what I noticed first about Andrea Alejandra Gonzalez. She's a 19-year-old youth organizer who fearlessly advocates for her various communities. As a mestiza queer advocate, she is undoubtedly a powerful voice for liberation. Andrea says she is not an activist by choice, but for survival. She advocates for gun violence prevention as the director of operations for Youth Over Guns. She fights for gender and racial justice, including the time her photos were displayed at the Metropolitan Museum of Art and the U.S. Capitol after being censored by her school for raising awareness about rape culture. She works toward restorative justice and has gained a deeper understanding of the detrimental effects of incarceration and policing, advocating for those affected by these systems. And her commitment to healing has led her to organize events like March to End the War on Children and March in Solidarity with Survivors. In other words, she's committed to making a difference for everyone. One thing we must all do in order to make a difference, whether it be globally or on a local level, we must abandon ego and individualism, she tells Teen Vogue. The only way we will win is when we radically love each other, and in that love realize that we are indebted to each other and must think of ourselves as part of a larger collective. Andrea never wavers in her candid ability to share her thoughts. Her honesty begs introspection. She inspires convictions and pushes you to grow in the best way possible. Next is Anika Shabrolu, age 14, the scientist. This was written by Samita Mukhabadya. I think I said that right. Anika Shabrolu is a 14-year-old Texan and scientist. Earlier this year, she won the 3M Young Scientist Challenge for creating a possible cure for COVID-19. In a year that was defined by loss with no end in sight, this teen took matters into her own hands. According to CNN, Anika's invention uses in silico methodology to discover a lead molecule that can selectively bind to the spike protein of the SARS-CoV-2 virus. This holds potential for COVID-19 treatments down the line. Anika had already been working on a cure for the flu when the pandemic hit. Science has always been a big part of my life, she tells Teen Vogue. Her family supported her interests, especially her grandfather, who was a chemistry professor. Her biggest challenge was believing in herself, until she realized it wasn't worth it to compare herself with others. I began to understand that in order to be successful, I needed to set my own standards, my own goals, and take my own path. Anika's advice for other young girls and femmes who want to enter the STEM field: believe you can do it. While STEM may be male-dominated, I feel that a lot of us as girls limit ourselves by not challenging the status quo, by creating our own imaginary boundaries, she says. To all other young girls who want to make a difference, I hope you all understand how important you are to this world. Do not let society's standards hold you back from reaching your full potential. Next is Anna Landry, age 21, the disability advocate. For Georgetown University student Anna Landry, being disabled is something to be proud of. I have never needed to overcome my disability in order to achieve my goals, the 21-year-old said. Instead, I'm constantly overcoming the physical, legal, and social barriers that this world creates for disabled people. This was something Anna became intimately familiar with when she nearly lost access to the disability services she needed in order to live independently. Last year, Anna says the company that administers Medicaid on behalf of her home state of New Jersey threatened to reduce the number of hours she could have her aides with her. Determined to assert her humanity and retain her life-saving services, Anna rallied disabled New Jerseyans having the same problem, contacted reporters, and worked with local representatives. The state eventually resolved Anna's individual situation, and now she's helped write legislation on the issue. Anna's conflict with the state deepened her commitment to disability rights activism. Many of these spaces, whether it's college, the workplace, or something else, are not built for us, Anna says. That means many of us have to forge our own paths and push past a lot of no's along the way. It's frustrating, but this is the work that needs to get done in order to pave the way for people who come after us. There's still much more work to be done. Next is Ava Lewis, age 21, the shapeshifter. This is by Lindsay Peoples Wagner. Ava Lewis grew up in Chicago's South Side, a neglected community that sits in stark contrast to the city's North Side, full of privileged neighborhoods. Living in a place that didn't have a grocery store, fitness center, or schools with resources prompted Ava to take action. Seeing the disparity between the two different sides of the city began to revolutionize me. It became apparent that more was possible for my people, she says. However, those in power made deliberate decisions to isolate us, divest from our communities, and capitalize on our labor and trauma. I began to imagine a world where Black and Indigenous people are free, and my work took off from there. At 16, Ava started a project that later developed into the Free Root Operation, combating gun violence through compassion. Years later, she's working on expanding programming through partnerships. As a writer, activist, poet, and artist, Ava knows all too well that just because the election is over, that doesn't mean our work is done. She continues to focus on her community's existence between elections and aims to help people acquire what they need to thrive. For those of us called to this work, sometimes it seems like we go through things that no one will see. My advice is to just hang in there, Ava says. What was meant to harm you will be converted into something transformative and beautiful. That's the power you hold. You can shapeshift adversity into a beacon for liberation. Next is Hallie Thomas, age 20, the plant-based wonder. This is by Tahira Hairston. At age 8, Hallie Thomas got an unexpected introduction to the power of food. Her father was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and as a result, her family switched up their diet and lifestyle habits. This was the first time I saw real-life examples of power of food and how it can heal or harm us, Hallie says to Teen Vogue. With a desire to spread the word to her peers, Haley at age 12 founded Happy, a nonprofit organization dedicated to wellness and plant-based nutrition education. But the more she learned, the more she realized wellness isn't just about what you eat. In 2019, she released Living Lively, a cookbook centered on plant-based recipes and the importance for Gen Z leaders and activists to nourish their minds and bodies. I quickly realized that you're bound to feel unbalanced when you don't put energy into yourself, she says, no matter what you're doing. Haley also advises young girls and femmes who want to make change to be intentional. When we are clear on our why and our service work's purpose, we give ourselves the freedom to make a difference in authentic ways, she explains. When we're intentional, we're less likely to feel the need to model our service work off of what others are doing and can make more focused on offering something to the world that comes from our unique perspective, heart, and spirit. And next is Hannah Lucas, age 18, the mental health champion. This is by Asia Malia Ware. At age 15, Hannah Lucas was diagnosed with a chronic illness, postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, or POTS. The condition can significantly affect your life, and it did for Hannah. Fainting in school and passing out led to her being bullied, harassed, and threatened. In turn, Hannah's mental health suffered. To help herself and others like her, Hannah got to work. I knew I needed a tool I can use not only for my chronic illness, but mental illness too, she tells Teen Vogue. Thus, her app, Not Okay, was born. The Not Okay app was designed to help users know that support is in their back pocket. The app tells trusted contacts when their user isn't feeling well and alerts them with a current GPS location. Hannah could have used this when she was battling depression, so now she's helping others so they don't have to experience what she did. Beyond the tangible benefits of the app, Hannah says she also hopes it helps reduce the stigma surrounding mental health in the African American community by finding true strength in vulnerability. Hannah is currently designing an exciting new update to further help her users, and she and her brother are producing a new podcast on an extension of the app. We want Gen Z to have a safe space to feel loved, accepted, heard, and understood from an unbiased point of view. Last is Hannah Testa, age 17, the Plastic Crusader. This is by Lucy Diavolo. Hannah Testa's path to climate activism started with a love of animals. I was a huge animal lover since I was a little girl, she tells Teen Vogue. Once I started to learn how animals that have roamed the earth for millions of years could go extinct during my lifetime, I was devastated. She pursued zoology and discovered that animals are under threat today, and she found out why. I learned how environmental issues were having an impact on animals, specifically plastic pollution and the climate crisis, Hannah says. I've been speaking up ever since, initiating campaigns, attending protests, and personally educating over 30,000 people across the world through my nonprofit, Hannah for Change, about issues such as sustainability, plastic pollution, climate change, veganism, and organic living, and youth activism. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazine. I hope you all have enjoyed it. Be sure to listen next time. I'm Bahati Mutisia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.